That's a song from Grand Theft Auto 5 soundtrack by a band called the Chain Gang of 1974. Hey, this is podcast number 108 of the Pacific Pelican.us /64 podcast. At least that's what we call it right now. And I'm Dan McKeown, and I'm here with my wife, Jessica. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So, I know that you saw a movie recently. I wondered if you had any thoughts about it. It was called Now You See Me. Didn't you see that recently?
I did.
So what did you think of that?
It was your typical Hollywood movie.
Okay.
And it did have an interesting surprise twist at the end, but if you're a smart enough moviegoer, you can figure it out. Had an interesting cast, and I think more than anything, it was just an action-packed, cool special effects kind of movie. Nothing to really, you know, make you think or make you cry or anything, but just more of a, you know, special effects kind of, you know, fun thing to watch. So I saw it with my dad when he was visiting, and we're like, oh, let's just check this out. And we were curious about it. And it was, I think what we said was it was better than we expected. You know, we thought, oh, this is kind of weird. It's about magic. Is it going to be stupid? But it was decent. And then we watched the Hollywood Sins on YouTube.
Oh, they had like the Cinema Sins channel, their take on that movie.
Yeah, and it's funny because when we watch that, you're like, oh, that doesn't make sense. And it doesn't, you know, but I think it's Hollywood, it's movies. You suspend a lot of those things, like, how come it only took them 3 seconds to get there? You're like, whatever, it's the movies.
Trust me.
Exactly.
Well, that's cool. I haven't seen too many movies lately, but I watched. I finally, after a few false starts, watched Breaking Bad through 2.5 seasons, like halfway into the third, and then I kind of just on and off, like. But you know, I watched that far. Yeah, at different times I watched about that far through it, and then I was like, I kind of paused on.
Why didn't you watch it with me?
Well, no,
I was watching it for a bit too.
Well, no, I yeah, but I think while you were working on stuff with your dad, I was watching it, and I had watched a few of them before, so it just, you know, there's not too many episodes, so you get to, like, you know, like, I over a handful of weeks, you know, you watch a few seasons.
That's true. What did you think of it?
It's all right. You know, I think it's got some clever plot lines, but, you know, so many, crises revolve around Walt just being, like, irritable.
Yeah.
There's so many things happen because of that, because, you know, there's no time to reason things through or you know, think about things reasonably, and everything is rash. But I guess that's the way the mechanic of moving shows forward. Now, on the other hand, some of the characters are pretty interesting. People of course talk about the Walter White character, and they talk about his wife. Apparently, there was even some, like, kind of argument about his wife's character. But I think I like the aunt and uncle, you know, the guy that works at the DEA, the bald dude, and then, you know, his wife. There are some interesting characters. The bald dude is like a, you know, like a stereotypical backslapping kind of cop.
Okay.
And then he has some, you know, all the fucked up shit that happens, and he has to deal with that. And then the one that plays his wife is, she's a pretty good actor. I think she's on that new Michael J. Fox show.
Oh, and who's the other person on that show?
I don't know. I think they have a handful of people, but I haven't seen an episode of it.
Yeah. I feel like there's somebody else that it's like, oh, I haven't seen you in a while.
Well, I know, like, they're trying to put a lot of people on TV. that haven't been, you know, maybe on TV in a while. So Anna Gunn is the woman that plays the wife on, you know, Breaking Bad. She plays the woman married to Walter White. She, you know, Skyler. And there's this opinion piece she wrote in August.
Okay.
In the New York Times. I'm not exactly sure where it's going, but I think I understand. She's saying, like, I'm in the second paragraph here, quote, "My character, to judge from the popularity of websites and Facebook pages devoted to hating her, has become a flashpoint for many people's feelings about strong, non-submissive, ill-treated women," unquote. You know, I guess like she's like defending her character, her fictional character in a newspaper. I'm quoting again, "As the hatred of Skyler blurred into loathing for me as a person, I saw a glimpse of an anger that at first simply bewildered me." I don't know, like, here's the thing. I gotta say that I understand why people would hate her character. I don't think it's fair to hate the woman. She's an actor playing the character. But she's really giving a weird description of that character. That character, like, she's always foiling, you know, like, attempts at him, like, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, they, you know, people, I'm not sure, and I guess he probably gets worse as the series goes on. But, like, she is a very irritating character. She's just, like, just incredibly self-righteous and annoying. Like, she's not a good model for the way she described women, non-submissive. Like, okay, you can be non-submissive, but be a total jerk. Like, you can be a modern woman, but not, like, you know, be likable. And that's the thing, is that there's a contrast with her, like, the woman who plays her sister, you know, the aunt. Like, she's seems like a very likable character to me. I don't know. I mean, I understand why people don't like her, and I think she's taking it very personally. If people make it personal about her, yes. But otherwise, if people just don't like her character, it's because of the way she's written, and the lines she says, and the decisions she makes, and the way she, like, approaches things.
Why do people hate her so much?
I have no idea, but that, I mean,
what
there's...
What is the one thing that you would say is just her character is, what, a bitch? Mean?
Look, I mean, here, let's just total up, like, here's the problem with her presenting herself, her character, as a role model, okay? Mm-hmm. This is a woman who, like, yeah, so her husband has problems, so she goes and gets a job. Great. Then she messes around, has an affair with the boss at that company. She's not like a character that you're like, oh, this is a woman who just dealt with a ton of shit and then just came out of it, like, with just her character intact. Most people in the real world, you know, like, we all have a breaking point. We all have a price. We all make mistakes. But she is not, like, a model character. Like, she does things that are not cool, even though it's like, yeah, you know, people can be driven to acting like that. You can't say, oh, you know, that's something that's wrong. And maybe there should be more relaxed attitudes about stuff like that. But the stuff she does, she knows that she's, you know, she's doing it vindictively. She goes and tells him about it. She does it so she can tell him to do it. Not like some people do, quietly having affairs when they're having a rocky time in their marriage. But, like, actually going and saying that because he, I don't know, he has a stash of money, or she has some idea that he's into the meth game or something, so she's going to have something against him, or she wants a divorce or something like that going on. So it's just like, she uses that as a tactic. Like, it's very cold and nasty, and, like, something like that, okay, that's not, like, your, you know, ideal solution, even for a modern woman. Like, there's ways to, you know, like, get away, get the divorce, and then go do your thing with, you know, somebody else. Like, it's like, I'm not saying that that's one thing to judge someone on, but she's disingenuous. She's being disingenuous in, like, the way she's defending her character. It's a world of very fallen people, that the world we live in, but also that show. And it's like, I think there's probably people that hate, like, every character in that show.
That's true. And I think, too, maybe as an actress, she's, you know, people are going to see her maybe always as that character. And instead of people seeing her on the street or giving her, you know, other movie roles, they're going to see her and be like, oh, I hate her, you know? So it could have a negative effect on her career. You know, when you play, unless you always want to play the bitch or the bad guy or whatever, she might be sensitive to that.
That might be true, but you can have a sense of humor even about that issue, which a lot of the people, especially, you know, the secondary characters from the show are facing. But, I mean, actually, I guess this guy's kind of a primary character, but the guy who plays Jesse, Aaron Paul, they actually asked him about, they were like, there were people asking him about that, like, are you, is your career over, you know, or are you typecast, you know what I mean? And, like, I mean, yeah, but isn't that something that everybody has to deal with and aren't there, like, there's a lot of people that get pretty big second roles in, like, television now, like, Katie Sagal, right? She was in Married with Children, and then, like, I don't know, probably some stuff, but then that Sons of Anarchy show she's been in for a while, that's a pretty big show, you know, like,
yeah.
There's people... You know, there's plenty of shows like that that have people that were on some before.
They do.
Michael J. Fox has on the show. Sorry.
Oh yeah, what's the Michael J. Fox show?
He's pretty talented, but I mean, it might be just called Michael J. Fox Show.
Who's the other person on there with him? That's a guy that's I haven't seen in a while. I feel like it's a guy from American Pie, but maybe it's not.
I'm not sure. Here's Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad.
Aaron, don't pull me into this.
Quick question. Oh, do you think you'll ever play another role that you love as much as playing Jesse?
Wow. No. My career is downhill from here. We all know it. I have to make sure of that.
Have a hard time watching another role.
What's up?
Do you think people are going to have a hard time watching you in other roles? Play a different character?
I don't know. I hope not. They'll still want me to call them a bitch, though, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I don't know. I mean, they're all kind of facing that question. Yeah, like, I would say I despise that show Malcolm in the Middle, but the guy who plays Walter White, you know, had a good second run with the Breaking Bad show.
Yeah. And he handled that well, you know.
Yeah, yeah, Aaron Paul there, yeah, That's pretty funny, I guess. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So. Now. Koch brothers made a big investment in American Greetings.
They sure did. It's actually called Koch AG Investments LLC now. And I think this happened. I don't know if it was like this year or last year. But I used to work at American Greetings, and so whenever I'm out and about in Cleveland and I go out with old coworkers, you know, there's always at least a good, you know, 15 or so, 20 minutes of the latest drama at AG, because it's a dramatic place to work.
Outrageous.
To say it nicely. So a friend of mine told me that they... heavily invested in the company. The company was public and they were turning it private, and they used investment money from the Koch brothers to do so. And, you know, you had a pretty good theory about why the Koch brothers made that investment.
Oh, just the vertical integration angle, right?
Yeah. But I just think that's kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a company that the Koch brothers, one of their major products is paper, right? Paper towel. Well, they don't care if it's paper towel or paper greeting card, but they want to keep that company going. So yeah, now look at that. At that point, I mean, that company has been taken over by those right wing billionaires, and you know, like, yeah, your friend Jill mentioned to you, I think, like, a lot of people don't know who the Koch brothers are.
Yeah.
So. Like, yeah, you know, though, if you don't, you should probably just, like, look it up. It's like, they're these right-wing billionaires.
Yeah, I think both brothers are worth $34 million. I mean, $34 billion each. I mean, that's a lot of billions.
Something in that neighborhood. It's, yeah. and whether they're overstating how much they have intentionally, or even possibly more likely understating and hiding a lot of their money. Yeah, I mean, like, there's a guy who does some pretty good movies, Robert Greenwald. He has this Coke Brothers Exposed movie. Let's see, but that's an hour long, so I don't think I want to play. I'll play that as a clip. People in Power, the Koch brothers, and then there's Senator Bernie Sanders. He was one of the great senators, the independent from Vermont. Apparently, he has something to say about the Koch brothers on the floor of the Senate, which no one else would say.
That, this government shutdown or the threats about not paying our bills and driving the world's economy into catastrophic areas, thinks that this is an idea that just occurred the other day, that a senator had this bright idea, you would be very, very mistaken.
It's a joke. It's a fucking joke. You know what it might be?
The fact of the matter is that we have a growing right-wing movement in this country funded by some of the wealthiest people in America, including the Koch brothers, a family that has made their money in fossil fuels and are worth over $70 billion. $70 billion is their worth. And they are worth $70 billion. They have access to the best health care in the world. They have access to the best housing in the world. Their family members can go to the best colleges and universities in the world. But they are obsessed by, among other things, making sure that 20 or 25 million Americans have no health insurance at all.
What the hell were you thinking?
Now, I am a strong supporter of a Medicare for All single-payer program. I don't think that the Affordable Care Act went far enough. But to say the least, that when 20 or 25 million Americans can finally have access to health insurance, go to the doctor when they need to go to that doctor, make sure that there are no regulations that prevent them from getting care because of pre-existing conditions. Can you imagine, Mr. President, billionaires, going to war against working people so that they and their kids cannot get health insurance? I mean, I think that is just obscene. That is just obscene. So let me just quote from the New York Times of yesterday. And it's important that people understand that the fight against the Affordable Care Act really is just the tip of the iceberg, that you have families and billionaires like the Koch brothers who not only want to see that we don't expand health insurance in this country, they have a long list of issues that they're going after.
What is your political
crime? In fact, they want to repeal virtually every major piece of legislation passed in the last 80 years.
You son of a bitch. That protect
the middle class and working families, women, children, the elderly, the sick, and the poor. That is their agenda.
Yes.
That is their agenda.
I mean, you know, like, just to give you an idea, because Bernie Sanders is a pretty good, right, he's a pretty good spokesperson for the reasonable side of this debate, because you know that the Republicans get funded a great deal by the Koch brothers.
Yeah, I was reading an article that said about $500,000 through one of their companies for the Obamacare teardown.
Oh, yeah, they're funneling all sorts of money any way they can into trying to stop it, and then they're gonna claim all sorts of stuff about how, you know, they're trying to buy up newspapers. They're trying to control the message because, you know, the message is finally turned against them. People are finally starting to figure out, you know, it's like there's a lot of people out there working these shady right wing, you know, circuits, paying for a lot of people who really wouldn't be supported by, you know, normal voters, you know, like Democratic and even more so liberal and progressive organizations have to rely on volunteers because people believe in the causes, right? Nobody believes in the Republican and right-wing causes, really, but people get paid. They have paid foot soldiers funded by people like the Koch brothers.
Yeah, they do.
That's like, you know, that's their whole system. So, you know, I mean,
stop it!
That's how I feel. But, all right, so, The fourth American in space died at 88, Scott Carpenter.
Yeah, that was kind of a sad news, but, you know, it kind of shows the age of our space program.
Sure does. He was part of the Mercury program, and he was the second man to orbit after Ohio's John Glenn became the first man to orbit. And those two before, you know, Alan Shepard and Gus Grissom had just gone to space and not gotten high enough to actually orbit around the Earth. So after John Glenn orbited, then Scott Carpenter did. And I guess there was criticism pretty much for the rest of his life about the way he handled the reentry. He ran two different guidance systems at the same time, supposedly, and then he got the angle of the capsule off, and he had to use sight instead of machines for part of the reentry, and then he was, like, hundreds of nautical miles away from where he was expected to land.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. That can really mess up things, though, because people have got to get over there to pick up, you know, the landed ship and all that stuff, right? And
absolutely.
It's not like those merchant, you know, ships move at a lightning speed.
No, I think they, with the naval vessels or whatever they were using at that time, they had to position themselves in a certain place to get based on guessing where they were going to go. I guess I've been hearing that they might have more sea-based landings in the future again, because that is kind of in some ways easier than dealing with all the things they had to deal with the space shuttle, you know, landing. And even then, you know, they needed a recovery crew in the water to get the boosters. I have this one more video. It's kind of funny. I've kind of gone through my modest stash of notes for this. You got any more stories to throw in the hat? Because you reminded me of a few of these. But, there's a Nobel Prize for Literature that went to a Canadian woman, Alice Munro.
Alice Munro. What did she do?
She wrote books.
Oh.
Let me quote from an article by someone named Bruce McCall in VanityFair.com.
Okay.
Alice Munro has been tilting the arid loam of her native Huron County, a flat and dreary patch of rural southwestern Ontario, where nothing has ever happened for the past 45 years and, either stubbornly or loyally, declines to expand her milieu. Southwestern Ontario is my native habitat, too. How flattering to find our humdrum corner of the world made the setting for the first Nobel in Literature ever granted to a Canadian. And a short story writer at that. The Literature Prize is a high tribute. To what exactly, I've never been exactly sure. But as a Southwest Ontarian born and bred, I can attest to the withering ecstasy of Ms. Munro's depictions of that grindingly conformist, stonily Calvinist world of humble lives and humbler expectations, where a gnawing sense of shame was inevitable, given the stifling moral parameters. One's inner misery was kept as secret as a crazy relative in the attic, invitingly rich territory for a student of existential and everyday despair, unquote.
Whoa, that's deep.
So it's like, it's a little bit of Canada, you know, Ontario, as they say. It's right across Huron from Michigan, but it's like, it's pretty far up there. It's the beginning of the county looks like it's a handful of miles north of London, Ontario.
Okay.
Which we've kind of gone by on our way to Toronto that time. Yeah. We came through Detroit, Windsor, but it's up north. In fact, we went up to Port Huron, so it might actually be more or less where we went through that area on the way back. But isn't that good? That's some good. I think it's some good writing. You know, it makes me want to read her stuff. You know,
yeah.
It's like a Sounds like a fascinating region.
Sounds like a what?
A fascinating region up there.
Yeah.
Canada.
I saw a headline recently that said that following in Yahoo's footsteps, HP is not allowing telecommuters anymore.
Oh, wow. You know, I don't know if we've ever talked about that, and that's a fascinating debate. I want to hear your take. Let me just give background. If anybody's listening to this and thinking, like, well, what is this about? Well, Marissa Mayer moved into Yahoo a couple years ago about, and she is the new CEO, and she's trying to set a new direction, do different stuff. So, but one of the things she did that was a little bit surprising, because some of this stuff was like people thought, oh, well you're going to pay attention to Flickr again. That's good. You know, like we want that. But then she said, oh, I'm not going to allow telecommuting anymore. And then this has been a divisive policy decision, but it is her, if she's the CEO, she probably, I guess she gets to set those rules. And I can probably see some value to it. Mm-hmm. However, if you have a company that's really charging on all cylinders and you don't have management issues, then you can probably allow telecommunication. However, like I said, with Yahoo, I think it might make sense to do what they're doing. But what's your take?
On Yahoo or just telecommunity in general?
I want to hear the bigger issue first, because that's the bigger issue.
Telecommuting. I think absolutely a company should allow it. And I think it's a perk and a benefit. Now, you know, having them telecommute 5 days a week, I mean, again, depending on their job and how much interaction they need, that's one thing. If you're trying to build a culture and a community, you need people there. It's harder to communicate culture just across, you know, telecommunications and, you know, if you have an isolated worker. But to allow people to work from home a couple days a week or certain days a month or job share, I mean, people have to be flexible with employees, and I hope that after this horrible economy starts to bounce back and the job market, you know, becomes one where the people who are looking for the jobs can have more say, that they're going to say, look, we want telecommuting.
Yeah, like I think that with Yahoo specifically, what's your take?
Well, I mean, here's the thing, you know, if you want really great talent, you know, they're not all going to be living in San Francisco. And the Bay Area, I mean, the traffic can be insane if you live in Palo Alto or, you know, over in Marin County or whatever. So just the time saved on allowing them to work from home instead of having to do that commute an hour each way, you probably get 3 hours out of them extra instead of those 2 hours. You know, it will form a loyalty with the company because, you know, an understanding, you know, a caringness. And then here's the honest truth. You can throw in a load of laundry. You can get stuff done. You know, you can get stuff done at your house while you're waiting for things to happen that you can't always do while you're at work.
Well, that's true. But I mean that people, maybe that takes people away. It distracts them from doing their work. I mean, think about Yahoo, where I don't think a lot of people are there. It with a real sense of passion for work. They're holding down a job, right?
True. Yeah.
Because they'd either rather work at their own startup or a cooler company. Like, I mean, even Facebook's probably still cooler than Yahoo. And I guess they've been, you know, Yahoo has had positive news lately, and Facebook maybe not as much. But generally speaking, let alone Google, which is really just down the road there. You know, all the different stuff that's out there, right? And you're at Yahoo. Why are you at Yahoo right now? You're just doing a job.
Yeah.
So if you don't have your manager looking over your shoulder, you can just pretend to be doing your job and do something else. Like, I think people are disengaged. They don't care. Like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I think she had to do it there.
What do you think about HP doing it? Again, another female CEO.
Who's the CEO of HP right now?
Know her name.
Oh, it's Meg Whitman.
Yes.
Oh, she used to be the CEO of eBay. She's not very good. You know, I think that Marissa Mayer is a pretty top level talent. I wouldn't say the same thing about Meg Whitman. You know, but whatever. She's going to imitate. She's, even though Meg Whitman is not even as young as Marissa Mayer. She's going to imitate her because Marissa Mayer has like a stronger track record. So she's just going to follow in their footsteps. And the fact is, she is guiding a turnaround, too. I mean, yeah. I don't think she's the right person to guide a turnaround. But you know what she's doing? Is she's helping mop up the mess that, among others, Carly Fiorina and Leo Apotheker made at HP. They've had some CEOs there that have just done stupid stuff. Buying out Palm and then running into the ground. Or doing pointless reorgs that didn't benefit the company at all. Like under Fiorina. And all this stuff that was going on, like... HP used to really have a name, right? You know, what people are saying, I don't know if this is true or not, but it's one of those stories that has the ring of truth to people these days, is that Apple, for their new spaceship headquarters, their big new HQ that they're building, you know, it is on land bought from HP.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, and the old legends were like, well, you know, that Steve Wozniak... worked at HP. It was like, that was the place where, that was a really cool, right, edgy company at the time, you know, cutting edge company. And I think the problem is, what does HP do? What do people think of them as being good at? People used to think of them as being good at printers like 20 years ago. They're not good anymore. They don't do a very good job with them anymore, right? Computers. They became the number one computer seller, and computers' margins are razor thin, and they're giving way to sales of tablets and smartphones and other things that the everyday users are using, right? And power users are going for Apple or Legend, whatever they're calling themselves, not Lenovo, you know, the people that bought IBM. Like, people are going for other types of computers, right, than just the HP stuff that's been out there forever.
Yeah, and, I mean, to your point, you know, Meg Whitman says they want people in the office to drive greater collaboration and innovation, and if you're really going to get past this printer, you know, what's next? I mean, you do. You need to be collaborative. You need to innovate. You need to take this company to the next level and not let it go to where Microsoft is, you know? And it still possibly has potential to rebound and to maybe go back to its roots when it was so cool and it was so individual.
Yeah, I mean, these days, so many of the technologies that HP was maybe people thought might build have kind of been built. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, they didn't seem to really participate, even though they had all that R&D and everything. Like Microsoft, they didn't seem to participate much in the last decades, like smartphone revolution and stuff. You know, tablets, right? Those have been the slow movers on that. It's been Apple and Google and Samsung and all these other people that have figured out this next generation technology. And yeah, that's, you know, and I guess in a way websites too, right? Yahoo is kind of the old 90s style website. And what have they done really to change that?
I don't know. I'm so like anti-Yahoo. And I know they're trying to stay in the game.
No, they don't, you know, a lot of people aren't very big fans because some of the stuff they've done is pretty mediocre over the last few years. Well, I have, all right, so I have one more clip to go out on. So thanks for listening to podcast number 108. It's been recorded on October 10th, 2013. And you can find show notes at pacificpelican.us/64.
You're not going to just play the clip.
Oh, I like having you laugh too.
Are you gonna play the clip?
I will, but I'll probably put it in after because I'm leaning over here to your computer. I've just hit the stop button.
Hi, how are you?
Are you out of your mind? America, I ask you sincerely, are you out of your mind?
No.
This is not, I mean, for the love of Pete, read any,
come on, don't bullshit me.
Any fiction book from the 1950s. We're creating what we were always told would happen, and everybody said, oh, that's crazy. 1984,
stop whining.
Brave New World, Fahrenheit 451, Terminator. They're actually talking now about creating drones that can decide to kill or not kill themselves.
Trust me.
I don't think that's a good idea. I mean, I saw the Terminator movie. I know it's not real, but I don't think that's a good idea. The same time we are designing drones and debating whether we should have drones, forget about a jury, forget about the president, that the drone, the machine, will decide whether it should kill or not.
I don't play that game.
Okay, wow.
What do you want?
Okay.
And at the same time, we're doing that.
We're creating artificial intelligence that we are told, and I believe, and I know. Then in 20 years, we'll say, I am human. What is the difference between you and me?
Bullshit.
The soul. The soul doesn't exist.
Outrageous.
You are an alcoholic.
Okay.
You need pizza.
Have you lost your mind?
No, it is not true.
Here's my plan.
Are we going to be united, or are we going to be divided?
Check the beat.